Hello everyone, my name is Hugo Sachs. I'm speaking from Zurich, Switzerland, and I hope you're doing fine and that all is working well with the transmission. I'm extremely thrilled to open the 2012 WHO series of teleclasses in infection control. This year, the series will alternate presentations on stimulating advanced topics of infection control with others that will be more targeted to crucial issues for settings with limited resources. You may find the entire schedule of the year either at the WHO homepage on the GPSC, the Global Patient Safety Challenge, or at the homepage webatraining.com/schedule. Now, the talk of today is the title is Behavioral Change in Infection Control Prevention in Infection Prevention and Control. And I hardly have to introduce the speaker, Andreas Voss. He is clinical microbiologist at the Canisius Wilhelmina Hospital and professor of infection control at Radboud University Nijmegen in Medical Center, both in Nijmegen, the Netherlands. He's also editor-in-chief of the ARIC Journal and co-organizer of the ICPIC conference in Geneva that started last year. His interests in epidemiology of multi-resistant microorganisms, especially MRSA, and hand hygiene. And like many of us, he came via hand hygiene to be interested in behavior science. The objective of this teleclass he's giving today is to raise awareness of the fact that infection control needs to adjust their communication and teaching and try to include new skills to better influence our clinical colleagues. Knowledge is not change, and great guidelines are not insurance for correct behavior. The talk will not present ready-to-use solutions, but principles that participants could use to develop their own solutions. Andreas is a world-known person, and he is known to be a great and entertaining speaker, and I'm really looking forward to his presentations. So enjoy. Andreas.
Thank you very much, Hugo, for the nice introduction, and welcome to everyone who's listening or viewing online. I have two kind of disclaimers. Number one, this talk will not be funny. This is a serious kind of talk on more or less a book what I read and which I will be reviewing to you and where I found a lot of the knowledge I have nowadays on behavioral change. And the number two is that this is actually from the Esmond Shea course. We will use the same thing for a workshop, and I changed the slides to a presentation here online because I believe that it's the best I can do to really come up with a concept of behavior and infection control. If you look into the second slide of my presentation, there you have all the psychological models and healthcare you can find. You have the theory of planned behavior, social cognitive theory, operant learning theory, common sense self-regulation model, stage model, implementation intention, and the last one I actually worked with too, and it helps, but we are not behavioral scientists, we are not psychologists. So this was far too complicated when I tried to find help in that. Where I did find some help was with the help of friends in behavioral science who told me what's on the next slide. It's the cover of the book Influence, Science and Practice by Robert B. Cialdini. And I have to admit, it's a short book, it's an easy read, and I hope that in 45 minutes that you will be able to grasp the main concepts. And with the handout of the slides, there's hardly any need to buy the book because I will do describe the main concepts, of which I think a lot of them are very helpful to us in infection control. So if you look at influence, the funny thing is that we all believe that we take thoughtful, considerate decisions all day long. Sorry, can you hear me? I hear something? No. We frequently, the problem in real life is that while we believe that we make thoughtful and considerate decisions, we actually a lot of times resort to the betas, which is a trigger. We have a single piece of information, and we act kind of in a reflex. This kind of reflex is called the click rear, an automatic response, like a mother turkey feeding their chicks, and when they hear the sound, the cheep-cheep, she will feed them. The funny thing is, if we are not so far from this mother turkey away, if you put a polecat, which is a natural enemy of the turkeys, in front of that mother turkey, she will be enraged and she will run away. If you have the same polecat and you give her the cheep cheep sound, the sound of "I want my food" of a little chicken, then immediately the mother is calm and starts feeding. So there's no thinking involved. There's an automatic response, and that is what, unfortunately, people do too. Or unfortunately, I don't know, but a lot of us do not think about it. So looking into the triggers for compliance with anything in the world, but including infection control, there are a few principles. And there are commitment, opportunities for reciprocation, compliant behavior of similar others, feelings of liking and friendship, authority directives, and scarcity information. And I will go through all of these points. And I will start out with the commitments, which again are subdivided in shortcuts and judgmental heuristics, contrast principles, and consistency. Let's start with shortcuts or judgmental heuristics, as the behavioral scientists will call it. When you see something that's expensive or you hear expensive, we all kind of automatically say good, or cheap, the opposite is not that good. So if an expert tells us something being true and valuable, then we are eager to believe that. And then actually in the airline industry and in the early days, this is what they call captainities, where airplanes came down because the captain said, "We are doing well," and no one else continued to think. So airline industry worked really hard to get over these kind of captainities. And in healthcare, we just have to do the same. And the nice thing is that in order to achieve those shortcuts, little words can help. And as we know from behavioral science, just to include the word "because" in your sentence will increase the success which you're trying, for example, to cut a line or do anything else. So, and the reason for that probably is that parents always answer the questions of their children with "because." So it's kind of inbred that when we hear the word "because," we already know there is a reasonable explanation coming, and we react different. So it's the way we formulate our answer already might influence our partners in health. Then there is a contrast principle, and we all know the contrast principle from going shopping. You go and buy a suit and a sweater, and you ask yourself, what is the first thing they will offer me when I tell them that I need those two things? And it's always the expensive item first. Because once you spend €500 on a new suit, it's easy to spend €100 on a sweater. Whereas when you already spend €100 on a sweater, you feel like it's a lot of money, I won't do that. So again, these people use the contrast principle. Same thing with when you buy a car. They sell you the car, which is completely naked, and once they wheel you in with the naked car, they start to dress it up and start to increase cost. And the same thing we do in early life. In the book, there's a nice example of a young daughter and student who's telling their parents in a long letter about that she has a dormitory fire and she fell out of the window and cracked her skull and went to the hospital and was saved by a fireman who then was HIV positive, became her lover, is pregnant and is going to marry. And she all did that, and you may see so on slide number 9 that she's ending her letter with, "Now that I have brought you up to date, I want to tell you that there was no dormitory fire, I did not have a concussion or a skull fracture, I was not in the hospital, I'm not pregnant, I'm not engaged, I'm not infected, and there's no boyfriend. However, I'm getting a D in American history and an F in chemistry, and I want to see you those marks in proper perspective." This is a clear example how contrast can help you to make your point. And obviously this is an exaggerated example, but a great one, and we do have to use that principle. Another principle for commitment is consistency. Amazingly enough, in ourselves, we want to be seen as consistent with our words and beliefs and attitudes. So whenever someone is taking a visible stand to be part of a movement, part of a challenge, they would like to maintain that status as a consistent person. Therefore, written down and publicly made commitments can be used to influence other and ourselves. And I would like to give an example. If you go to slide 11, you see consistency at the beach. If you ever thought about it, does it really help when I run away from my towel where all my valuables are and I ask someone I totally don't know to look after my stuff? The amazing thing is, when robbers come along and you did not ask any of the unknown neighbors around your own towel, your stuff will be gone without any interference. In the moment you ask a stranger, and that stranger said, yes, I will look after your clothes, then in 19 of the 20 cases, they will actually react to someone who is trying to steal. I assume the number 20 is the thief, him or herself. But it's amazing what a little bit of commitment can do. So you have to get people to bring this over to infection control. We have to bring key role players in our hospital over to commit publicly to the aims of infection control. And another good example for that is the so-called foot-in-the-door principle. And in this case, it was an experiment where they actually looked, and they looked at homeowners, and they placed a large, they wanted to put a large billboard in their front yard, and a group said 17% complied, and then the other group 76%. And the question is, what was the huge difference? And the difference between the two groups was that those, the group B in the slide number 12, who were nearly 80% complied with the request of have a giant billboard in your garden, it was that they, 2 weeks before, 3 weeks before, they came along and asked them, are you interested in supporting our idea of be a safe driver? Would you place a 3x3-inch sticker on your window? So in that moment, they got them. They got them publicly to say, I'm in favor of safe driving. So when they come with the kind of request, which is asking for a far too much, you would say, 76% felt like we are already committed to this action, so we continue to do that. So it's amazing what little things can do in order to create commitment just because people have the feeling of consistency. And the best thing is, and that is the explanation in slide number 13, if you first have something, the top layer, you could say, the conservation of something you want to do, if you first just have as the only support, you have publicity. But then what people do automatically, they start and build around their own thing. They could say, I want to save the environment, I want to save antibiotic misuse, I want to save patients' lives for the healthcare system. They can come up with all different ideas. So what they will actually do is they will generate a self-support. So when you then roll out, as shown in this picture, the first reason to start the whole commitment project and the whole project, they will still continue to do that because by now they have a new self-image and they would like to be consistent with that self-image. So if we look at the first principle I was going through by now, the contrast and consistency principle, and see how could we apply that in infection control, and I will do so at the end of every chapter of my talk, which is more or less equal to a chapter in the book, I think that it shows us that the key person as a role model is extremely important for hospitals. You do need to publish the list of whoever is supporting infection control. You let them have to let them sign a pledge. And obviously, this was very well known to WHO already because that's the first thing they did when starting the patient safety challenge. They asked ministers of health to sign a pledge, to get commitment to go further. And you have to work on your customers before you really ask for something. So maybe we have to change our approach to our client customers by coming up first, ask them for a little bit. Once they are committed to what we want them to be, then we ask for what really makes works or comes along with cost. So that was just my ideas, and I hope that many of you have other ideas how to use these principles, and I would be really grateful actually, if anyone who listens to this talk and gets some ideas and sees a way of a different way to use them within infection control, to let me know about it, and I will use that for future teaching. The next principle is the opportunities for reciprocation. What does it actually mean? In the moment, we feel obligated to future repayment. Someone gives something to us, will create the feeling of obligation, and we will look automatically to find one or the other way to repay that friendly person that was giving us something. It's a famous so-called Koch experiment where one of the undercover researchers was giving a Coke to people he was in an experiment with and didn't know that he was the actual researcher. And at a certain time, he runs out, gets the Coke for him and someone other. And if you then look in those who took the Coke, they immediately had a feeling of liking for that guy. And then when later on the guy came with, by the way, I need to sell some raffle tickets, the percentage of those people who bought tickets was much higher in the group of those who had given a Coke. So you give a little present, you get something back, because people feel like even if it was an uninvited favor they received, they have to pay back. So uninvited favors give us a feeling of paying back. And if you look at other examples of reciprocation, then it's like, how do you find someone? Imagine you're at the side of the road and you need to put your furniture in a lorry or a truck. Well, there are different ways. You can ask people and tell them, would you like to help me and to do the furniture, and I'll promise you later on I'll pay you, or you give them a little bit of that payment and then you ask. And amazingly, if you just give like, and there's something, the same thing with in the mailing, as you can see from slide 16, where I have an example of a mailing. You first mail in and give them $5 and ask them to fill a questionnaire. That will be much more successful than let them fill in the questionnaire and offer them $50 if they return it. So the return rate is much higher if you offer them something ahead. They have something unwillingly from you in your hand, and they will do much more more than you asked for. So a small favor triggering a response that might even be much bigger than the favor they received. So that's the same thing, and this on slide 17, you see more examples for that, for Boy Scouts selling tickets for a show. If they can't sell them, you tell them the candies, because you already rejected the ticket, you will buy the candies, and sometimes you spend more than $5 on them. So that is another reciprocation technique, and it's called rejection then retreat strategy. The first thing is you offer them something, you get rejected because maybe it was too expensive. Like, it feels like me having a conversation with the CEO of my hospital about the number of people I can employ with an infection control. So I'll tell him that I need 10 more. He will obviously reject that, but he then will take the two I always wanted, which are up next, because he rejected me first. Now he feels like he has to do something for me. And you can call it rejection and retrade strategy. Another name for it is benefactor before beggar strategy. It's used all in the world around us. And it's in slide 18, you see there's a Santa Claus being taken in by the police, who actually was not a real Santa Claus, but someone from the Krishna movement. And he was trying to get money from people, and he did so by handing them sugar canes. And once someone took the sugar cane, then they start to ask for money. And you will see that over and over again. You will see that when you get roses in the restaurant or wherever you go, people give you a present you didn't ask for, and they hope that you feel obliged to them, give money to them, or do what they ask you to do. So that's the principle we should use in infection control too. In slide 19, I'm saying, for example, we could have those nice clip watches, which are also good to get rid of all your wristwatches that are in the way of good hand hygiene. We could give that to healthcare workers as a Christmas present, and then thereby at the same time launch our hand hygiene campaign. So they're getting something and they feel obliged to be part of the hand hygiene campaign. At least that is the hope. The next principles are compliant behavior of similar others. This is slide 20. And if you look, there are two principles, the principle of social proof. It's important means that people use to decide what to believe or how to act as to look what others believe or do. So we are not by ourselves. A lot of people look, and this comes back to role models and other things, they look up to people and say, what is my others in my surroundings are doing? What are the leading people doing? And I will follow what they do. And social proof is most influenced under two conditions, uncertainty and similarity. That is the two words best performing. So let's go to some of the examples. If we view correct behavior as correct to the degree that we see others performing it, then lots of people will do it. Or the basic principle, which is used even on the front cover of the book, where you could see 1 million exemplars of this book are sold. If many people bought this book, it must be a good book. But lots of people do it, it must be right. And this is exactly what you have in slide 22. Just one of the 50 million Americans who invest in U.S. saving bonds. Obviously, when 50 million Americans do that, this is where our money should go. The question is it right or is it just a trickery? But there's an important principle about it. A lot of times we start our talks about telling people that 80%, 60% of the healthcare workers, they don't wash their hands. 50% don't follow infection control guidelines. And if you look at the principles of behavioral science, we should stop doing that because actually if we tell people that only 40% disinfect their hand or 60% don't do it, they feel like they're in the right spot. We do what most of the other people do. According to behavioral science, they are in the good group. So we do have to change our approach of how to get this done. And another example of social proof and good examples is doing what others do. Is think about the movie industry or so-called live shows that use laughing tracks. Even so, we do know that this is an artificial laughter. The same sentence, the same comment of the moderator, of the commission, whoever is doing it, will sound much more funny if we hear others laugh. At that time, while obviously knowing it's fake, we still think it's more funny. Despite that, we can help it. And so we have to pre-prime again the people we are working with in the hospital, as you could say the church ushers do. If you start your collection on a Sunday morning at church, don't start out with an empty basket. Make sure that there's already bills in there before everyone is trying to put the coins in there. They feel much more restricted to put the few too loose coins of their pocket in there when there already is a lot of paper money in it. The last example would be the one what's going to happen. If you have one person who is looking up, then no one will do anything. If you have a group of persons looking up, what's going to happen to everyone who's passing these people? Obviously, they will do exactly the same, and unfortunately, in my slide, the third thing is missing. I'm sorry for that, where a whole group is looking up. Looking up to, by the way, nothing. So next time on the street, talk to a few friends and try it out. Just walk and look up anywhere into nothing and ask the other ones to do the same. In the media, there's about 4 to 5 people doing that. You will see that all other kind of bystanders do exactly the same without any reason giving. It's good, it's be done, because all people do it, even though it's not all. So that is, we just follow the flow, you could say. The other one, and another principle, is heuristic ignorance or uncertainty, as I said. So uncertainty is something that stimulates our behavior quite a lot. In the picture on slide 25, you see two people laying on the ground. And uncertainty will make sure, are you getting help or not? In this case, are those people drunk? Do they have a heart attack? Do they need the time? When people move by, all the others will continue to do the same. And we have heard heartbreaking stories from China and from all around the globe about this kind of incidents where people who needed help did not get help, because when the first three, four people pass you, the chances of number five and number six will stop in this situation of uncertainty is nearly zero. So what you say, if you ever come into that situation, make sure you use your last energy to talk to people, point to people, say like, you guy in black here with being bold, like here in the picture, try to point out someone, because that is the only way it helps to break through that uncertainty to ensure that you get some help. So these principles we could possibly use. And if I look into, and I kind of already took it, said it before, how could we use those principles of social proof and infection control? As I mentioned during the last few minutes already, never again start a lecture with only 40% disinfect their hand. Instead of that, say 99% of all the healthcare workers agree that hand hygiene is the most important thing to do. So change your way of talking to people. Maybe we have to do, and there are good examples which I didn't refer to now, we have to pay role models. Maybe by actually paying a few who are seen as a role model within the hospital or giving them little favors to be the good example, they can set the trend. You can also work with, and we thought about the WHO hand hygiene campaign, the DAPT, and then colleagues develop, and Hugo, among others, and the movies. Movies can be very stimulating. You can change behavior by just letting people show the right way. Either in a poster, but even better probably in movies, this is the way to go. And last but not least, you could use it. You develop your own campaign logo, whether it is for hand hygiene or for good catheter care or whatever you want. As long as you make sure you have a logo, people know what it's for, and you are able to get that onto your key opinion leaders within your hospital to show it off to everyone else, to show their public support. And then this is one way, or I think you can use the principles of social proof in infection control. Another principle is the principle of feelings of liking and friendship. And this is used by industry quite a bit, because it's well known that we kind of prefer to say yes to the request from people we know and we like. So factors leading to liking could be, of course, the physical attractiveness, that's the so-called halo effect, similarity, familiarity, praise, and association. And I will talk about all these factors now that can lead to liking. So first, the halo effect on slide 28. It occurs when one positive characteristic of a person dominates the way a person is viewed. So if you have the luck of being a good-looking gentleman or lady, people will think that you have a lot of talent, you are kind, you are honest, and you are intelligent. And it actually helps. So I will be very, very selective in my taking in infection control nurses in the future. But obviously, we can do that, but we can use it to our advantage, I believe. And it works in all kind of situations. Amazingly, is if you look into the judicial processes, then behavioral scientists found out that handsome men get lighter sentences from female and male judges than someone who already looks like a criminal. So this halo effect works even in moments where there shouldn't be any difference between any man or woman. The other feeling is this feeling of similarity. We like people that are similar to us, and we are more likely to help those that are dressed like us. It's kind of remaining that close, and I will come back to that later, can have an important influence on what we do. And as I said, similarity will help you to get to generate this feeling of liking. So it doesn't make any sense to run around in a tie all day long. If all the people you have to talk to hate ties. So make sure that you dress similar to whom you are addressing. And then we knew that for long, we are all phenomenal suckers for flattery, compliments. Give positive comments. And I think the Hugo as a Swiss will know that, because there's a there's a big chain in the food selling industry, the Migros, that's only got extremely big by its owner using exactly this way of complimenting. Instead of telling people what they did wrong, he made sure that he told other people what they did right when people were around to hear it and kind of knew, hey, we don't do it that way, just we do it wrong. You strike twice in one sentence. Number one, they really like the compliments, so they will feel honored and are much more likely to continue their good behavior. And second, you told the other people what not to do without publicly offending them, so they are much more likely to change. And then there's association. A lot of time, an innocent association with either bad or good things will influence how people feel about us or our product. Our product infection control. And even so, we don't have it, but think about buying your car and then all the pictures you see in advertisement, you always have that good-looking model next to it. You really only want the car. So why is the good-looking model there? For only one thing, association. Good-looking model must be a great car. So this principle is something we should choose. And for all the male under the listeners, I'm sorry to say that the rating of an identical car changed with and without the model, and all men believed that their judgment was not influenced by the fact that there's a pretty lady in the picture. So obviously we are, but we don't want to. And that's the whole thing about behavioral science. As I said in the beginning of my tour, it's a click weird, it's automatic response, it's not controlled. So we, and most of us, with the exception of me, of course, will do so. And I find myself still doing that, because I'm reading a lot about it and trying not to fall for that. But the ladies have the same problem. I don't want to only talk about the men. This so-called fail sign is amazing what it can be. Because you have good experience in the past, just the sign of sail over the windows may already completely change the shopping behavior of people. And the same thing you can achieve with celebrities. If you can probably recognize in the tiny little picture about that this a famous golf player from the U.S. who is in front of that car and trying to help to sell it. And he really can't drive any better than ourselves. And he really has no ideas about cars. It's probably his sponsor. But just the fact that we, by association, see that car with this famous golf player will get for a lot of people to say, hey, maybe this is the brand of car I would need. So we have to make sure that we use this kind of principles in the hospital too. So my conclusion from the last chapter would be, and that's written on slide 33, praise instead of criticize. I think it's a much better approach. Let others report about the outbreak and extra measures and not yourself. That is a little bit the bad weatherman guilty, eh? You are guilty by association. You tell people that the weather will be bad, it is bad, they will be furious. And they take it to the person, as some of the weathermen knew who were attacked by people. They have nothing to do with the weather, obviously. They just try to predict it more or less, right? But you are guilty by association. So we should think about who is bringing over the really bad news. Is it us, or do we ask our CEO and other people in the hospital to do so? Maybe we need to do what industry is doing a lot, because association also means can be associated with a nice place and a good meal, which is why a lot of companies invite colleagues for dinners and lunches, because in that atmosphere it's much easier to create that association. So we need an infection control luncheon. Even so, I don't see that I have the money for doing it right. And we should use, obviously, local celebrities or other one, non-medical celebrities to advertise infection control. And if we are totally honest and look into, like, at least in my country, into raising money for cancer patients and other things, they already follow that principle all the time. Just never tried for infection control until now, to my knowledge. So I think we should really try to use this principle. Another principle is, and I'm not really sure that that is the best to use for infection control, but in the book, and I at least want to mention it, is the authority directive. And it's actually, it's all about the power of authority. And there's a famous study from 1974 about the Milgram study. And maybe this is something you should look up in the book, but it's amazing how far you can people in a research setting where there is an authority. Actually, what they did, they kind of electrocuted, not real, but an actor. And by just someone else saying, this is an important experiment, please continue, people went to voltages that would have usually killed that person. And just by following authority, and it was a study from 1974, and the unfortunate thing is you could say yes in 1974, but there are newer studies like the Milgram study until just like 4 years ago that show that still people in a setting like that where they feel they are just doing what the authority is telling them, they go and do the most stupidest thing they are, including at least acted hurting other people. So we are suckers for authority too. But authority can also be used in other forms, namely titles, clothing, and automobiles. You should say, what is this all about? And sorry, this is slide 35. It's the Milgram study. So if you see it, just look it up. Look it on Wikipedia or read the book. It's really interesting and certainly most interesting that it's still true today. But I wanted to go to the symbols of authority you can use. To have a title like a professor, to have the right clothes like a slick suit, or to come with the right trappings, as they call that, which could be a nice car or a nice anything, it really will change. And if you don't believe that, then have a look at slide number 37, which is about titles. What they did in the university in a study, they introduced someone to the student body. And they once introduced that person as a fellow student, another time as a young teacher, a senior teacher, a full professor. And the amazing thing is that when they asked later on the students from how tall was that person, whenever you got a level higher in standing from student to young teacher to senior consultant to professor, you grew 0.5 inches just by the right title. And we're always talking about the same person. So it's kind of amazing that status already has a different influence. So when you really want to achieve sometimes, it can be good to have some status in your hospital and to have the right titles, just to convince others. And clothes do, unfortunately, the same. If you think about the well-dressed, a person is more frequently obeyed in what they say. And so probably that's the one I should change about myself, because I'm usually not well-dressed. But if you're well-dressed, someone is like jaywalking, so crossing a red light while going over the street. More people will follow a well-dressed gentleman than a sloppy-dressed one. And it's kind of amazing that that actually works, but it works through all of it. So we do have to pay some attention to how we present ourselves to those people we try to convince to do good infection control. So what could we do? Again, the summary of this chapter, we could all start wearing a tie, and I'm not really in favor of the last one. Get an impressive office, certainly if you get visitors to come to you. Meet and be seen with senior clinicians, so I will use every opportunity to be seen with my CEO, or use your Porsche to work. Actually, in my country, you would achieve the opposite because people hate expensive cars. But I'm just saying, look into your own country, your old culture and your background, and see how you can use it. It sounds kind of silly to use all these psychological tricks to our advantage, but what we need to do is we need to convince others. One of the last things, scarcity information on slide 40. And that's amazing. People assign more value to opportunities when they are less available. And the number, and you say it's a limited number you can buy this, as only a deadline. Only until then you can get it. Difficult to get gives the impression of being valuable. And why is that? Because we really hate to lose the freedom and choice. So when we have the feeling that we have no choice our wishes increases to actually get what we're looking at. So it's also another principle in this is psychological reactance and scarcity in information. If you look at psychological reactance, and I can tell you it's a real word, actually called reactance, it's things that are difficult to get are better. That's the whole idea. In the moment you take away my free choice or you limit my free choice in any way or even threaten to do so, you want me or I will start to significantly more want the product. If you have two little children and you offer them the same toy, one in front of them, one hidden behind a glass panel, that little kid will go to a lot of effort just to grab the same toy, which is behind the glass panel, even if it has to go up, crawl around, do all kind of things, just because they don't have the choice. So it is in there. And another example for all the parents among us with teenagers, if you tell your teenage daughter that the new boyfriend she has is completely inappropriate for her and that you should really don't like her to see him, this will only increase the wish to see this boy. He just became more attractive. So we have to compliment her on a good choice instead if we really want to try to get rid of that. So it's easy principles you can use in real life, but we also obviously, and that's what we're all here for, use them in infection control. Censorship is the same thing. If you put on standard, banned, or anything else on an information, and it was tested in students where they were put on the same book, which was literature for the students, they put the stamp censored. Those people, the students who got the censored edition, which was exactly the same, obviously, the amount of people who actually fulfilled their task in reading the book was far higher than in those who got the plain cover. So that helps. And then there's a last thing in this, the commodity theory. If you try to sell a product and you just sell it with the standard information, your success will be far less if you tell them, you give them the same standard information, but yet, you know, and not everybody can have it. I believe it's becoming scarce in the future. And you even got better when you include it will become more harder to get, but you are one of the person I exclusively will offer this. All this will increase the selling of a product or the selling of a message, as our message will be. And this has to do with what the psychologists call, among other things, the feeding frenzy. It's humans as animals alike, and now we are back to Mother Turkey and the polecat and the right noise, or to fishes in the water. If you put some water in, some food in the water with a lot of fishes, they will all come and they will bite like crazy. And when you then enter an empty fish hook, they also bite the empty fish hook, just because they can't control their instincts anymore. And that's the same thing when you have auctions. That's why auctions work so well. And in the book is a nice example of someone who bought a suit from an actor in Saturday Night Fever for $145,000. Just because there was a bidding frenzy ongoing that they couldn't stop anymore, and this is how auction houses make much more money than was just selling it logically. So again, what would be from the last chapter, what could be used in infection control? If the next time you introduce a new hand drop or a catheter into your hospital, you have to maybe differently present and announce it. You can say, this is new, this is top of the line, we have to restrict it to intensive care units and some other units. And I can tell you, now people will tell you, I want that product, because, and when you just did it, introduce it, people will tell you they don't want it and they don't like it. So if you announce limitations and hand drop and then find suddenly a new source of supply, maybe that helps for people to actually use it. And as I mentioned before, and I really would like to stimulate you to do so, if you see any good example how you could use it, please mail it to me via Paul Weber Training or directly if you have the Gmail address, which I believe is there. But please do so. So let's go to my summary on slide 46, because we are close to the time I was given to me to give this talk. And I know I went through it really fast. It's not the idea, as Hugo already said, that you have ready-to-use solutions here. It's the idea to give you tips of behavioral science and how to use them and which principles are there which you might be using in your own practice. So this was, in my opinion, if you want to get the book, you should do so. It's cheap enough, and I have nothing, I don't earn anything in that, but it's an easy-to-read quick book, but the main principles were here. It's not only in order to effectively implement infection control, it's not all about facts and knowledge and guidelines. It really is about behavioral science. We do have to change our way of selling our message. And the fun part is that behavioral science offers a lot of explanations what we nowadays see. To just tell you for the last two or three slides I have, that it's not only in the books but also in the literature you might see, and that these examples return all the time. I put two slides or three slides on the spreading of disorder. That's on slide 57, it's the cover page from the Science Express report on the spreading of disorder from a group in Groningen. And I really, really like this example. What you see in the big example is that you have an orderly alley, like the one in the picture in slide 48. There's no graffiti. There's a big sign on the board, no graffiti here. And what the experiment is then you actually put, and you might see all the white papers at the steering wheel of the bike, the steering bar. If I put them there, then look how many people will actually litter. And if you then did the same thing, and in an unorderly street, you could say, as you could see here, there's this alley has a lot of graffiti next to the sign, no graffiti. So the amount of littering in the orderly alley was 33%. The amount of littering in the graffiti alley, as I would call it, was nearly 70%. Why is that? People get different messages. You see the sign graffiti forbidden, and you see everyone around you obviously ignoring those rules and those sign sets. So what is your first reaction? If everyone is ignoring rules here in this environment, I can do the same. And I think this is one of the best examples we can have of telling people while we do good role models in hospitals, why we have to behave well, because people will, they know the rules, they see other people not obeying them, and they will start doing exactly the same. So when people see and observe inappropriate behavior, that weakens their own concern of appropriateness. So we do need, and that is my last message on slide 50, we do need the good people showing appropriate behavior within our hospital. And with that, I had 45 minutes. I know it's 44 and 48 seconds, so I'm obviously just in time. And I just end up with the last slide showing what are the other dates and talks that will come in this WHO teleclass series. And I thank you very much for staying with me for 45 minutes on behavioral science. And I'll hand back to Hugo.
Thank you, Andreas, for this excellent talk. It's you even did my job in announcing the next upcoming teleclasses. For example, on March 7, achievements in improving injection safety worldwide. And you were right. It wasn't a funny talk, but it was amusing sometimes, and sometimes it was even a bit worrisome, because seeing like as we behave like animals isn't very flattering. So, do you think that sometimes it's not only about buying people to do the right thing so the others would follow? Don't you think that sometimes people then would detect that there is no honesty behind it?
Yeah, obviously, I mean, that is the danger of doing it. And that's why I said, please come up with your own ideas on how to use those principles of behavioral science to change your environment and enhance infection control. I believe a lot of times we don't. And sometimes, as I said, we know it's fake, like the example with the laughing track. If you hear it, you know it's fake, you still react. So obviously we are much better than animals because we have the ability to not only react but also think and find our own way. And luckily we're doing that most of the time, but a lot of that is an automatic response. So yes, they might know, but kind of, I know pharmaceutical industries and then people who deliver stuff to hospitals who pay people in the hospital to promote their product. And a very unfortunate thing to do, but this way they create their champions, as they call it, the champion system within a hospital, and then there will be people running around promoting their product. A horrible system to do. But again, if industry is doing it, why couldn't we do it in a more with the right reason? So if it's okay for society to look at it for the wrong reasons, then the sale of a product which is maybe too expensive or we don't want, why couldn't we use the same principle for the correct reason, namely increasing infection control and patient safety?
Right. It just puts a lot of responsibility for people using these techniques because you really want to make sure that you do the right thing. So I have one example for you from our hospital from the past for psychological reactants. When we did give lessons and promotional sessions on hand drop, and we distributed the hand drop bottles, the carry-on bottles, we had a clip that you could use to clip the bottle on your gown outside, so you don't have to carry it in the pocket. And it was something that was not readily available, and I realized that this was a great promotional item. So I gave it to some people, and then people talked to each other, did you get one, and how do you get one? And it was really an object of desire. And actually, I called it the swatch effect, because the swatch watches in the beginning, you never got the model that you wanted.
It's perfect, and that is a perfect example, actually, what you're mentioning. We can have an item you wanted to give anyway, so you don't have extra cost. It comes probably with from the supplier of the bottles. And even if you would have had enough, the next time around we should do it, you should keep back some. And then you only give it to some, and thereby increase their wish for the others to get it, and then you exclusively give it to some. So you have a lot of... It's amazing where something that, in this case, in your case, it came naturally, but you can actually willingly do exactly the same, and that will really help. It's with Swatch, think about Apple iPhones. When the iPhone 5 will come out, it probably will be understocked. So the craziness to get one, even so it's not very much different from the 4S, will be extremely high. And sorry for making advertisement for Apple this way, but they are using this principle all the time.
Right. One last thing, the great study you showed in the end about rules and the broken window theory, I think there is an addition for this. And since I saw you mentioning the first time this in a talk, I used it a lot in infection control, because there is a decision to be made when you introduce a new rule and you know already that it will be not followed. You better think twice to not introduce it, because it might even be harmful, because people then breaking this rule will tell other people to break other rules in the hospital.
Totally agree, and that's why I put it actually on the end, because I thought it really is one of the clearest principles and an adaptation of the principles how to use it. And you're correct. In the moment that you introduce guidelines people can follow, you will achieve exactly the opposite for other guidelines too. You create that disorder. You create the fact that people will see that guidelines are not followed and thereby do not follow the guidelines they might have followed otherwise. So absolutely correct. And then I have the same slide in the talk on guidelines where I tell the people one of the most important principles about guidelines is do not ask anything you know ahead they will not be able to do.
Exactly. So thank you very much, Andreas, for this great talk and bringing all this information to the community of infection control. And again, next session in the free WHO teleclass series of 2012 is March 7 with achievements in improving in injection safety worldwide. Thank you for listening in and
goodbye.